Well, please, if you have a Bible, do turn to that passage we read just a few moments ago together. It's page 1176, Ephesians chapter 5. We're just going to look at a couple of verses, three verses this morning. Wake up, O sleeper, rise from the dead, Christ will shine on you. Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise but as wise, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. It's a section we're going to look at. Three things: wake up, wise up, and cash in. Wake up, O sleeper, rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. Years and years ago, I worked in a swimming pool, and one of my jobs, I had to change the chlorine gas bottle to because it's the chlorine that keeps the swimming pool clean and so on. And had a gas mask on, and there was a bit of a leak, and I tell you, you only need the slightest whiff of chlorine gas, and you're coughing, your eyes are watering. There's another gas that doesn't do that at all, but is just as deadly. It's called carbon monoxide. You don't know it, you can't smell it, but it'll kill you. It will kill you. Sometimes you can buy those little spots that are in your house, so if there is any carbon monoxide, it'll show you so you don't die in your sleep. The thing about chlorine is if you inhale that, you will cough, you'll go red. It's a terrible gas. You used to use it in the First World War in the trenches. Carbon monoxide, you hardly know someone's dead at all. They've still got their colour. The only thing is, they're no longer alive. Well, this man is writing to people who could be in the sleep of death, even in a meeting like this. You see, Christianity is not about coming to church. It's not about an ideas that you think are interesting or a lifestyle that you think is attractive. It's about knowing your sins forgiven, knowing that Jesus Christ is God's Son. He's died on the cross for you. Knowing that you need to be forgiven before you die, because the Bible's very clear. We die and then we face the judgment, every one of us. And to save us from that judgment, God sent Jesus to die for us. Jesus took the judgment on the cross so that we might never come under God's judgment. But we've got to come to that place where we commit ourselves to Him. I don't know if you've ever had a really serious operation. But before you have a really serious operation, you have to sign a form. And what you're doing is saying, I can't save myself. I commit myself into your hands, Mr. Surgeon, to do what needs to be done to save me. Well, Christian faith is a bit like that. Christian faith is not, oh, it's nice to come to church. Christian faith is saying, Jesus Christ, I commit myself to you to be saved from something far deadlier than a heart attack. I commit myself to you to be saved from my sins. Will you forgive me? Will you save me? This last week, Jenny was, she's a nurse, my wife, and she was on a ward, and there was a 96-year-old man, and he was coming to the very end of his life. He was dying. And she said to him, how are you feeling? And he said, well, actually, I'm quite frightened. But what are you worried about? And he said this, with minutes to go, I haven't made my peace with my Maker. Well, she said, well, you know you can. You can ask Jesus Christ to forgive you. He's your Maker. And you can make your peace with God. And Jenny had other things to do, and she went back to him, and he said he had made his peace. Well, God knows. But 96 years old, and the last minutes of his life. Well, this author says, don't leave it to then. What if Jenny hadn't gone to him? He wouldn't have known how to make his peace with God. This verse says, wake up, O sleeper, even in a meeting like this. Don't think because I'm come to church or mum and dad are Christians, I must be a Christian. A Christian is somebody who says, Jesus Christ, Son of God, will you forgive me? Will you save me? The Bible's promise is that everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. He doesn't wait till you get yourself better. A doctor doesn't say, look, wait a few months till you get a bit better, then I'll do the heart operation. If you need a heart, you need it now. If you haven't had your sins forgiven, well, this morning's a great time, even where you sit, where you are, to say, Jesus Christ, Son of God, will you give me a new life? Will you forgive me? Look at the promise. Wake up, O sleeper. Christ, rise from the dead. Christ will shine on you. Jesus Christ has been sent for people like us, for sinners, the Bible says. Jesus came not to heal the well, but to heal the sick. And we aren't necessarily physically sick, but we're all morally and spiritually not what we should be. We've not loved God with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength. And Jesus has come to bring us God's forgiveness and love. So wake up from the sleep of death. If you're not yet a Christian, wake up this morning, wake up. But also, you could be a Christian and you've dozed off mile after mile. Do you ever do that on the motorway? Are you guys like me? I know there's a service station, but I'll get to the next one before I have a break. Because if I stop at this one, all those cars I've overtaken are going to just zoom by me. So I'm going to keep going, and I keep going, and Jenny goes to sleep, and the kids go to sleep. Every now and then she says, well, you're still awake, Ray, and I'm driving, you know, I'm still awake. Are you like that? That's not good, is it? But you can be like that as a Christian. You can come to church week after week after week after week, and you kind of just lose reality with God. It becomes a routine. Become dopey Christians. Sometimes you say, we've got a carol service. Let's take a carol service, because anybody could invite anybody to a carol service, let's say. And I've got some Christian friends, have you got any friends coming to the Christian, you know, the carol? You're going to invite some friends to the carol service. And they go, oh, not this year, you know, maybe later, another year. Hey, hold on, what are you thinking? What are you thinking? I think this is what many Christians, they say they believe in the resurrection. Jesus has risen from the dead. But actually, practically, I wonder, do you believe in reincarnation? That is, I've got this life, and I want to enjoy it, and when I come back next time round, that's when I'll invite all my friends to the carol services. Next life. So many Christians live like that. There's mums at the school gate who know loads of other mums at the school gate, but have never, ever invited them to anything. I mean, you know all these mums, why don't you invite them? Oh, I will in my next life. I'll later, I'll put it off. Don't go dopey. Don't in theory believe I have one life to live. I want to live it for the Lord Jesus. But in reality, actually think, well, you know, it doesn't really matter that much, do it? If I don't ask my friends, it won't matter. There'll always be another opportunity. That's dozy Christianity. Don't go sleepy on the things that matter most. Wake up, O sleeper. Wake up. You've only one life. Live it well. Don't ever think, well, I've got to get all these things in this life, and next life I'll do the things that God really wants me to do. In my next life, I'll tell people about Jesus. In my next life, I'll invite them to things. You won't. There's no next life. There's only one life to live. One person put it like this. When you go to heaven when you die, if you're a Christian, there's only two things you can't do in heaven. One is you can't sin. The other thing is you can't tell people about Jesus who don't know him. So why do you think God has left us in this life then? It's not to sin. It's to be like shining lights into a dark world. That's what the writer to the Philippians said, didn't he? Just turn over the page. Page 1179, Philippians 2. He wants us to be children of God, verse 14, without fault in a crooked and depraved generation, in which you shine like stars in the universe as you hold out the word of life. Christ shines on you, so you want to shine into other people's dark lives as you do what? Hold out the word of life. As you share the opportunities God gives you to share your faith and communicate something of the wonderful Christian message. You're not going dozy as a Christian. to wake up from the sleep of death. If you're not yet a Christian, wake up. Don't doze off as a Christian. If you are a Christian, you've gone a bit dopey and church has become a bit routine. It's all a bit dull. It's a bit samish. Open the window a bit. Ask God to make himself more real to you. Make those times when you're with him, times when you really pour out your heart for things that matter. Wake up. But second thing he says, wise up. Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise. Wise up. Use your head wisely. Think. Christianity does affect your feelings, but it doesn't bypass your brain. It gets you to think clearly, needing to see the big picture. Came across this lovely story. A lady called Joni. She was a young, very attractive, vivacious woman, and she went diving and dived into the sea. Didn't realise there were some hidden rocks, and she was paralysed from the neck down. Can you imagine that? I can't imagine that. No hands to use, no arms, no legs, just paralysed. All she could do was twist her head and talk. That's all she could do. And people say, oh, you know, poor old you. Well, she has lived a lifetime now of showing that God can use her. And somebody once said to her, what has really helped you to overcome that, being paralyzed from the neck down and still living full on for Jesus Christ? And this is what this author says. He says, when I asked her this question, she said, this is the only time in history when I get to fight for God. This is the only part of my eternal story when I'm actually in the battle. Once I die, I'll be in celebration mode in a glorified body in a whole different set of circumstances. But this is my limited window of opportunity, and I'm going to fight the good fight for all I'm worth. Isn't that brilliant? She really did believe in the world to come. And she knew in the world to come, she wouldn't be paralyzed. And God's new world to come will be fantastic. She'll have all of eternity to explore it and celebrate and joyfully praise God. But this is the one moment she's in a fight against evil, against her personal sin, against injustice, unkindness, and ignorance of people who haven't yet heard the good news. This is her one moment. So she says, I'm going to do the very best I can. I see the big picture. I've used my mind. So in this big picture, I don't need to be self-pitying. In all the time that comes in eternity, this moment of being paralyzed will only seem like a little flicker on my memory. But I have this life and I want to make it count for God. I want to fight the good fight. Now that fighting the good fight takes all kinds of shape. It means being the best mum I can to be my kids, with my kids. It means being the best worker I can be at work, enjoying the God good. It's not a kind of simplistic thing of how many people can you grab by the throat and tell them about Jesus while you sort of give them a tract. That's not what she means. She means just living full on for Jesus Christ and all the heirs he wants us to. And she thought it through, you see. She didn't give in to self-pity. Do you use your brain like that? Do you use what you know that's true about your life and about God's big plan to say, right, that means therefore I will live like this? Are you living wisely? Or are you just going through Christian life without really thinking about it? And the other thing he says is, live your life carefully. Use your head wisely. Live your life carefully. Be very careful then how you live. Don't live in... The Apostle Peter talks about you were handed an empty way of life from your forefathers. An empty way of life. Don't live an empty way of life. Do you know the story of the four big water, stone water pots? You know that story? Four big, huge earthenware water pots. And there's a man in a conference like this, and he said to his helpers, bring in the rocks. And some helpers brought in rocks and filled them all up. And he said to the congregation, "What do you think that means?" And they go, "Oh, I don't know, they're full." And he said, "No, bring in the pebbles." And they brought in, and they managed to get the pebbles in between the gaps where the rocks were. And what do you think it means? And the congregation, "Well, I don't know, it looks pretty full to us." He said, "Bring in the sand." They poured in the sand, so these four water jars full. And the congregation said, "Well, they're now full." He said, no, bring in the water." So they poured some water in, and the water got into all the tiny little cracks. He said, "Now the water jars are full. What's the lesson?" Somebody said, "No matter how hard you work, you can always put some more hard work in." He said, no, that's not the lesson. You don't need to be a maniac. The lesson is this. If you don't put the big rocks in first, you never get them in later. You've got to get the big things in of your life right first. That's what it means about being very careful. "Oh, I'll start giving to God's. I'll be more generous as a person when I earn a bit more money." No, you won't. You've got to get that right. "I'll start talking to God. I don't mean a 45 minutes on my own, but I'll just start talking to God later when I've got more time." Now put that in. "I'll start praying with my wife when the kids are grown." No, you won't. Start doing it now. Put it in there. Put the big rocks in. "I'll start being enthusiastic about worshipping God and being positive at church." "Oh, I can't do that yet. Too many problems in my life." No. Get that in. So get the big things in the water jar first. Because that's what he means about being careful. There'll be things grabbing for your time and energy and money and skill all the time, won't there? All the time things, "Oh, no." And we know life's like that. You know, you when you have your car MOT, don't you dread it? What else are they going to find? A bill that you didn't expect. They're always going to come, but don't let that stop you being a generous person in the first place. If you wait till you give God what's left over, there's always the dregs, isn't it? So being very careful how you live. Time with the Lord. Using your time, talent and treasure for God and his kingdom. Wise up. Where are the big rocks in your life? The big things that you think, "Yeah, I should tell my wife I love her more. I should tell my kids I'm taking them to play more than I do." They're big rock things. Get them in. And then all the other bits of life, you know, they'll fill up the cracks. So he says, wake up, wise up. And the final thing he says is cash in. Cash in. Make the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. Cash in. Cash in personally. What do you mean cash in? Well, the little word here, it's a word that comes from the Greek marketplace, the agora. What he's got in mind when he says make the most of every opportunity is market day. And you know the best time to go to the market is when they're packing up in the afternoon. Why? They'll just throw the stuff at you. You want some oranges? Oh, have them for a pound. Whereas earlier in the day, you know, they were a pound each. He gives you a whole box because he doesn't want to take them home. You're cashing in. You're making the most of the opportunity. Occasionally, I don't know, when that big Morrison's, when it opened, occasionally, don't they? They say the 100th customer or the 1,000th is given a trolley for a minute. What would you do if you had a trolley for a minute? Would you just kind of wander around slowly? Now, you'd go to Morrison's first. You'd see where all the most expensive stuff is. You'd tear down the aisle and you'd get all of it and shove it in as quick as you possibly, because you only got a minute. Then the bell would go. Would you imagine if you just filled it up with cornflakes packets or something? What a total waste of time that would be. See, that's the... Now, you see, is that what he's talking about? Yes, that's what he means. He's using a word. It means... It's the word market, agora. Cash in. Make the most, seize the day. Exactly what he said. You just turn back that passage. Some of you will have read the other night, Colossians 4. You just turn to Colossians 4, page 1185. It's the same little phrase there. In verse 5, be wise in the way you act towards outsiders. There it is again, you see. Be wise. Make the most of every opportunity. Exactly the same word, exactly the same context. Context is saying, when it comes, to living life, especially communicating the faith, go for it. Don't hold back. Just think of it. It's as if he's given you the credit card, and he doesn't mind how much you spend on it, and he's not going to say what. It's like, go on, you spend what you like. You can hardly believe it. He can't mean it. Yeah, he means it. God has given you a life to spend. Spend it well. Seize the day. Carpe diem is the great phrase, isn't it? Seize the moment. Make the most of it. We're not fanatics. That's the wise thing, you see. Occasionally you'll come across fanatic Christians. We have one in Northampton. He stands on a street corner and he literally bawls at people as they go by, shouts at them. Was this massive great circle of people who skirt him, they give him about 50 yards. There's another friend of mine who works, and he just talks to people quietly. He seizes the day, but he's not a fanatic, he's wise. Now, what wisdom will take for you, what shape that will take for you? Well, we're all different personalities, aren't we? We've got different opportunities in life. It's no good comparing yourself with somebody else. If you're a mum with a little child, that is like a passport to friendship, isn't it? When you're a bloke of my age, you have to work a lot harder. You have to start, play golf, or I play hockey, or join the local model railway club. There you go. You could do all kinds of things to meet people. Not necessary to scalp them the first time. I'm a Christian, you know. I want you to come to our church. I've only met you 3 minutes ago, Ray. No, that's not. But you share life. You get to know people. You begin to pray. You realise that this man's wife died young. This man here, he's got real problems with his children. And you get to know him, and you ask him, how are your kids? And you tell him, I've been praying for your kids. You what? Yeah, I've been praying because I've got kids too, and I know what it's like. And over a period of time, you find you build up relationships. That's seizing the day. Choosing to spend time with people is never wasted time. We live these highly individual lives, very private, really. Whereas Paul the Apostle wants Christians to seize the moment, to recognize this is the only time ever. See, life goes fast, doesn't it? Our time is, that's why he says seize it, because it goes fast. All of the people older than us said, time will go fast. And you go, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then when you get there, you go, I can't believe it. I mean, I'm 53, and when I was a little bit young, I thought 53 was absolutely ancient. Where's your stick, Ray, kind of thing. When my dad was 53, thinking, God, how old can you get? You get there, you go, well, it doesn't feel any different from when I was 21. I used to think 70 was old. Now I think, well, 99, yeah, that spoils you getting on at 99. But doesn't it go fast? It goes so fast. You can't believe it's gone. 3 decades I've been in Bedford. I've got some new young elders. What have you been doing with all your time, Ray? I don't know. It's going so fast. That's how it is, isn't it? There's this lovely book called The 60-Minute Father, Rob Parsons. Have you ever read that? It's a cracking read. It's a scary read because he says, look, you imagine you've got your children for 18 years. Do you know what that is? A 6,570 days. Imagine I had an egg timer. If your child is 10... 3,650 have already gone. You've only got 2,920 left. No amount of money, power, or prestige can increase that number. You know, it's the only thing we all share in common. 24 hours a day is all each of us have got. None of us can make it longer. We've all got exactly the amount of same time. The difference between us is that some of us choose to spend our time well, and some of us fritter our hours away. And it goes unbelievably fast. If you've got a 10-year-old, already they're over halfway to being off your hands. You might think that's a good thing, but actually soon you go, oh no, I wish I had spent more time talking, praying with, having a laugh with my children, because they're gone. So it's Christianity in the marketplace. Use the opportunities. The days are evil. It's no good moaning. A lot of us Christians moan about the world in which we live. Oh, it's terrible now. It's so much easier all those years ago. No, it's always been evil. It's always been a mess. There's never been a great time in the past when it was easy to be a Christian. The days are evil. We shouldn't be worried about what the world is like. The world should be worried about what we're like. The greatest danger in the world is Christians, because we've got great news and God is on our side. We shouldn't be overwhelmed by, oh no, it's so evil, it's terrible, let's keep our heads down and say nothing. What's come into the world is the power of the resurrected Christ. The world's always been evil since the day Eve and Adam sinned against God. But what's come in now is the great love and power of Jesus Christ. Who's got to be worried? The people who are not Christians. Because there's Christians everywhere. And Christianity is growing faster now than it's ever grown. We shouldn't be, as it were, pummeled into silence as Christians. Don't mean we're a bit aggressive, nasty people. That's not what he means at all. But we seize the day. That's true of you personally. There will be a time when you can't teach your kids about Jesus. There will be a time when you can't pray with your wife. She'll have died. And you wish you had have done. There will be a time when you can't invite your neighbours because you're now in an old folks' home and your hearing's gone and you don't speak very clearly and you wish you had used the day when you were younger. There will be a time when you can't get more involved in church life. You actually need people to help bring you. Make the most of the day, he's saying. Our lives aren't to be wasted. And as a church, I'm so glad that you're praying seriously about finding another full-time leader. Seize that day. Some churches, there's one near us, have been praying, thinking about it kind of since before World War II. You know? Yeah, they have. They believe in theory, but in practice, they've just got used to not having a pastor. They still talk about, oh, we're looking for a pastor. Can you believe? I could tell you the name of the church. It's not very far from where I am. It's before World War II. They've got the money. They used to have the people. Gradually it's dwindled, but they got the money to have a pastor, but they just never got round to it. You think, well, that's ridiculous. How can Christians do that? Because you just put it off for another week. You just keep doing that long enough and 60 odd years goes by. Believe me, it can happen. So I'm glad you're seizing the day and you're taking it seriously. Pray for the church to see people become Christians. Don't think we can't see that happen until, you know, some great revival in the future. Well, God is the same God. The good news is the same good news. Seize the day. Turn to Luke 16 as we close, because this is a challenge to us where Jesus underlined the same theme. We'll close our weekend with this. Luke chapter 16. A parable of the shrewd manager. Let me read it to you. It's page 1050. Jesus told his disciples there was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and asked him, "What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management, because you cannot be manager any longer." The manager said to himself, "What shall I do now? My master is taking away my job. I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do, so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses." So he called in each one of his master's debtors. He asked the first, "How much do you owe to my master?" 800 gallons of olive oil, he replied. The manager told him, "Take your bill, sit down quickly, make it 400. Then he asked the second, "How much do you owe?" 1,000 bushels of wheat, he replied. He told him, "Take your bill, make it 800. The master commended the dishonest manager because he'd acted shrewdly. "For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than the people of light. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself, so that when it's gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. Whereas dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So if you've not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? If you've not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you property of your own?" Now, a lot of Christians get muddled about this because they go, the master commended the dishonest steward. What's going on here? No, there's only one point to this parable. It's this. This bloke's a crook, right? He's been fiddling the boss's books for ages and ages, and the boss at last finds out. The boss is going to fire him at the next time he sees him. So the bloke thinks, oh no, I'm going to get fired. I've been found out. I've got to feather my nest. I'll tell you what, I'll get all the blokes in that, you know, owe my master money, and I'll just say, don't worry about it, just pay him less. I say, so I'm still in job at the moment. When the master finds out, he goes, do you know what? That's clever. That is very clever. I can't prove it, but I know this bloke knew what was coming and did something about it. That's very clever. That's what he means when he commended the deceit. He doesn't say lying and cheating and stealing is good, especially when you rob me of my own money. It's not what he's saying at all. He's going, that's clever. You knew I were going to fire you, so you did something about it. And that's the point of the parable. Non-Christian people, this man is a worldly man, he's a cheat, he's not God-fearing in one way, but he knows what's happening, he does something about it. And Jesus said, you know, people who don't know God are often wiser than the people of God's kingdom, who know one thing is coming and don't do anything about it. You know one thing is coming. You're going to be with the Lord Jesus in his new world forever. You're going to go to heaven, and then one day your body's going to be resurrected. You're going to be God's new heaven and new earth. That's the one certainty about your life. The moment you trust Christ, the one certainty is you're going to be with Christ forever. That's what you know. But you don't live in the light of it. This man knew he was going to get fired, so he did something about it. You know you're going to be welcomed into heaven. Why don't you do something about it? Why don't you live with that certainty in mind? It's the one certain thing. Jesus says, isn't it sad that the people of this world are more shrewd? They understand. They do things about the future. When the people of the kingdom, sadly sometimes, don't live life any differently. So he says, verse 9, I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends. If you've got money, time and skill, use it on people. Use it on people. Forget the railway track, Ray, up in the loft. Some of you know that one day, I don't know, electricity in heaven probably, I don't know. Big railway track, wow, it's going to be a big one, isn't it? Because you can build it forever. Yeah, but forget that. Use your time, talents and treasure on people. For if people become Christian believers through you befriending them and you talking with them and you sharing life with them and you showing interest in them, if they get to heaven before you do, when you get there, they're going to make a beeline for you, aren't they? They say, I thank Jesus for you. I'm so glad I've been able to come and say thank you to you as well now. Wouldn't that be wonderful? That'll be happening in heaven. There'll be people who get there before you. And when they see you arrive, they want to come up to you and give you a big hug, as it were, and say, Jesus Christ, use you to bless me. Isn't that amazing? That's what Jesus is talking about. Can Jesus trust you with the life he's given you? Can he trust you to use the time he gives you, the money he gives you, the skills he gives you, the abilities, the aptitudes, the friendships, the neighbours? Can he trust you with those things? Will you use them for him? That's what he means in this parable. It's exactly what Paul is talking about here in Ephesians. Let's make sure we use our lives well. We wake up if we're a bit dozy. We wise up. We're not fanatics. We're not nutcases. But we do cash in. We use our lives for the glory of God and for the cause of Jesus Christ. Thank you.